The next year or so saw several energetic and promising young men enter the preaching field. Among them, Clovis T. Cook, Fred Kerbo, Frank Cope, J. Irvin Waters, and William Freeman Jones. For some reason, Brother King was especially taken by William Freeman Jones. In August of 1938, he was added to the editorial staff. This proved, in years to come, to be a tragic mistake. It is impossible to know how Jones's presence affected the order of worship question and the eventual division over it. There is good reason to believe that J.D. Phillips came to resent his presence on the editorial staff, and time certainly proved him to be an unworthy cohort in the common goals of the Old Paths Advocate. Even though very little was being said at that time publicly through the columns of the paper on the order of worship, the subject was fermenting behind the scenes. In March 1938, a conference, as J.D. Phillips described it, was held at Competition, Missouri between Brothers King, Gay, Jones, and Phillips. Doug claimed that during the discussion both Gay and Jones vowed to fight his position on Acts 2:42 in the paper. When he asked Brother King if he would grant equal space for a reply, the answer was, quote, "Wrangling will kill the paper," unquote. Convinced in his own mind that he was slowly but surely being squeezed out as an editor, Doug wrote to Homer King in March of 1937 demanding to know, 1. Do you intend to put me off the editorial staff? 2. If so, do you intend to buy my interest as a gentleman would do, or rob me of it as Duckworth did? Brother King's reply shows both restraint and wisdom. Now, Doug, it is evident to my mind that there is something wrong with you besides the difference on Acts 2:42. I still remember the formal note you wrote me relative to publishing your article on the scriptural names. You had never in all your life written me in that manner. I meant to write you then, asking what had prompted you to so write me, but was delayed. Then this last climaxes it all. Really, I am ashamed of you, Doug. I thought our long and pleasant friendship merited a friendlier and more respectful consideration than in either of these communications. I never dreamed that you would write me as you have. I thought I at least deserved a respectful, friendly consideration. You made insinuations in this last that I would not think of making to a rank sinner. Take this one. Quote, "Do you intend to buy my interest as a gentleman would do, or to rob me of it as Duckworth did?" Unquote. Now, Doug, aren't you ashamed of that statement? Just to intimate that I would rob you? Have I ever acted in a way as to make you think that I would rob anyone? After I have befriended you as I have, and then you ask such a question is beyond my understanding. Relative to your other questions concerning what we intend to do, etc., I cannot now answer directly, as much will depend on what you do. Remember, Doug, the trouble over Acts 2:42 has been revived the last few months due to the agitation by you. We have refrained from agitation just because we wanted peace and unity if possible, hoping that you would see the mistake of advocating it in the churches that did not have it, and thus avoid this unhappy state. You should remember that we have in many places built up churches at a sacrifice, and we regret very much to see them torn up and divided over this matter, and it was not until you began this agitation that I consented to do something about it. I have done my utmost to keep down contention over the matter, hoping and praying that we might all work together without ever being forced to openly consider the matter, which consideration I feared would result in open division. It was my love for you and others with you and of peace that caused me to remain silent as much as possible. Doug's reply was terse and to the point. No, there is nothing wrong with me, as you put it, except the policy of the paper and your and others' antagonistic attitude toward me and what I teach that you constantly say cannot be wrong. I have no time with my correspondence and editorial work to write long letters unless the nature of the case demands it. I told you in the letter why I wanted the article published. You published about half of it and said you would run the rest of it in the April issue. If so, that part of it will be settled. A number of preachers had been telling that I was taking Brother White's position on the same question. I knew they were not telling the truth. So I asked you to publish the article. Since you did not include the Church of Christ section in the March installment, some have had their suspicions increased. but that is all right if you publish the rest of the article in the April issue. You say the agitation over Acts 2:42 has been revived due to my agitation of it. Perhaps it is partly the fault, if it be a fault, of others as well, including you. The very first that brethren at Healton, Oklahoma, and many other places ever heard of the matter was through preachers peddling garbled reports of my and Brother Gay's correspondence. They naturally wanted to hear my side of the question. You may not know it, but when I went to Wichita Falls for a meeting the last of August, Warning had gone ahead of me there to watch me and not let me put Acts 2:42 over on them. That was the first they knew of the matter. I was asked to teach on it there. Who preached against Acts 2:42 in Los Angeles after they had adopted Acts 2:42? Who opposed it in Indiana, where the churches now following Acts 2:42 started that way? Who told the brethren in West Virginia last spring that there is, quote, no difference between Brother Phillips and me on the worship, unquote? Who told the brethren there that it is right to follow Acts 2:42 and all churches ought to line up on it? Who has written most, if not all, the young preachers warning them against my position on Acts 2:42? Some of them have been pretty free to tell this wherever they go. Who promised me that if I would stay on the OPA as an editor, that you would continue to publish both sides of the question until it had been pretty thoroughly thrashed out? How much have you published in the paper advocating Acts 2:42 since you made that promise? The situation began to deteriorate quickly. Feeling he had no other recourse, Doug submitted his resignation as editor to Brother King in May 1939. The resignation was published in full in the June issue. This may well have been the saddest day in the history of the One Cup Brotherhood. At the time, and to those involved, there seemed to be no other way to settle the matter. In his resignation, Doug made one statement that may have been an indicator of future events. I quote, "To Brethren Paul Hayes, Ben J. Elston, R. H. Bull, E. L. Jorgensen, and others, I owe much for the highly spiritual atmosphere I have been permitted to enjoy while in their presence. These latter-named brethren are constantly engaged in prayer and seem to feel the presence of God always and everywhere." Brother King felt this was an indication of the direction in which J.D. was traveling. Brother Harper would have hooted at such a thought. He would have wanted to know how men who accepted innovations, as both Bull and Jorgensen did, could, quote, feel the presence of God always, unquote. Was Doug, at least in this regard, drifting? There are so many paradoxes in this entire situation that one marvels at the turn of events as they transpire. Without doubt, both Doug and Homer King had a deep love and respect for each other. No sooner had the break come than Doug wrote Brother King saying, "I have not heard from you regarding my apology for the tone of some of my letters and the hard things I said to you, but am making allowances for the forwarding of mail, both yours and mine." Within a week, Brother King replied, "Yours of the 11th is before me, and I assure you that it was received with much joy. I assure you, Doug, that I freely forgive you for any and all unkind things you may have said to me in our correspondence, as you so nobly have asked. Let me ask again, too, that you forgive me of my injustice I may have done you in word or deed. Doug, our friendship has been of such long standing and of such intimate relationship that I simply cannot dismiss it nor forget it. Although I felt that you had lost all love for me, yet I could not give you up. Neither could I cease to love and respect you. I am so sorry about it all, and I have often prayed over the matter, hoping that some solution would present itself so that we might be reunited in the love and fellowship we once enjoyed, and that we might stand shoulder to shoulder again in battles for truth. I just cannot give up such a good old pal overnight, and it hurts me and grieves me very deeply to know that there exists a barrier between us which makes it impossible for us to have that same good relationship that we have so long enjoyed. I pray that every barrier may be removed so that the work of the Lord may not suffer, but move steadily on unhampered by division. I am praying that even yet, some way or somehow, some solution may be worked out whereby we can all go on together in the noble work we have so successfully begun. Old pal, I would to God that you could see your way clear to cease the agitation, making a statement for publication to that effect, or in some way making it possible for us to blot out the past and reach forth to the things before. Such a reconciliation was not to be. The breach was gradually widened until finally an open division developed. If only those involved on both sides could have let well enough alone, perhaps the whole unhappy mess could have been avoided. If only Doug could have been content to let those churches who chose not to use the order continue without it. If only Brother King and those with him could have refrained from interfering with churches who wanted to adopt the order, or from warning those without it not to adopt it, maybe, just maybe, there would have been no division. And then there is the matter of outside interference. Others getting into the act, some for personal enhancement, not understanding the far-reaching effects of their actions, others out of spite or envy. Evidence indicates in the opinion of this writer that from this point forward a great deal of politics began to be used by both sides in this unfortunate and lamentable situation. In May of 1940, Frank Cope, for example, wrote Brother King trying to get him to use his influence in getting a meeting J.D. Phillips was to hold in Wichita Falls, Texas, canceled. God only knows how much of this went on behind the scenes and what effect it had on hearts that became hardened and drifted farther apart. The division was widening, with both sides claiming they didn't make their belief a test of fellowship. Those opposing the order wondered why those advocating it didn't demand its use to the point of disfellowship. Doug replied by citing an instance where he heard Brother King preach a sermon on Sunday morning at Spencer, Indiana, condemning cups, and, quote, less than 30 minutes later partake when two cups were used, unquote. His point was that brethren were demanding of him what they would not demand of themselves. While he definitely showed there had been inconsistency on the part of some, he was unable to justify his own actions in the current situation. The truth. In 1936, Brother A.H. Pinniger of Memphis, Tennessee, began publication of a little paper called The Truth. It had a limited circulation and was published on an irregular basis. Brother Pinniger worked in a service station and was unable to give it the time and effort it deserved. After his resignation from the Old Paths Advocate, J.D. Phillips became associated with Brother Pinniger in this venture, finally taking over publication of the paper in January 1942. For the next 33 years, it would serve as a medium through which his views were made known to the Brotherhood. It would, he contended, publish both sides of every issue. The Truth, especially in its early years, tended to widen the already existing division between the two groups, with people lining up behind their favorite paper. There were, however, a number of brethren who wrote for both papers, with no trouble resulting. Not everyone was content to allow things to continue as they were. Brother Tom E. Smith of Harrelton, Oklahoma, regretted so much the division and its horrible consequences that he set about to do what he could to effect a reconciliation. He wrote Doug asking what it would take to bring such to pass. The reply, under date of January 20, 1941, contained 5 conditions, some of which had nothing to do with the trouble at hand, and others unrealistic in their application to the present problems. When all was said and done, Doug concluded that, quote, the most serious charge I have against them, unquote, is their failure to print my articles in the OPA on Acts 242. If they will make good their promise made to me in 1936, I am ready for a reconciliation. The editors of the Old Paths Advocate rejected the conditions laid down by Brother Phillips, contending that the original policy of the paper had not been abandoned and the disagreement had come about over its application rather than its substance. The Price Falls Meeting. On July 4, 1941, a meeting was held at the above location in the state of Oklahoma. There are several reports about what happened and why. In the afternoon, an open forum was held on the order of worship question. Irvin Waters, in his OPA field report, stated that each speaker was given 10 minutes in which to express his views, quote, although this arrangement was made by the order advocates, they complained because there were more speakers against their position than for it. Unquote. The August 1941 issue of the OPA is filled with glowing reports of the meeting and the good all felt was done in settling the issue at hand. On the other side, only three spoke in favor of the order: J.D. Phillips, Buford Hambuck, and J.C. Tate. Brother Johnny Tate told me that Doug didn't know what was planned for that day and felt the other side ganged up on him. Edith, Doug's wife, also said she felt the people were unfair and very unchristian in the way they acted that day. Irvin Waters, years later, apologized to Doug for his part in the matter, feeling that the best interest of the cause of Christ had not been served. Even though things did not look good at this time, efforts at a reconciliation did not cease completely. In October, Doug wrote Homer King, "I am glad nothing happened at the 4th of July meeting to cause you to change your mind relative to our proposed get-together meeting. Nothing happened to cause me to cease to desire it, but I must confess that many things were said and done that did cause me to lose hopes of anything being accomplished by it." For the next 9 years, these two brethren exchanged letters, promising and planning at some time to get together and talk, but something always prevented it. Their schedules didn't match, or some unavoidable situation arose. Finally, on March 24, 1959, after 18 long years, a meeting took place in Bakersfield, California. Present were brethren King and Phillips, along with Don McCord and George Biggers. As a result of that meeting, all personal differences were eliminated and forgotten. There was also a discussion of differences on doctrinal points. Some, but not all these, were resolved. Brother Don McCord deserves credit for arranging the meeting. Even if all differences could have been resolved, which they were not, the lingering effects of the horrible affair continues to remind us of the high cost of division in the body of Christ. Through the years of separation, many strange things happened. For example, a number of churches continued to use Brother Phillips even though they didn't adopt the order. On the other hand, some churches who were using Acts 2:42 as a guide for observing the items of worship called and used preachers who rejected the idea that this verse taught an unvarying order. During all this time, Doug refused to make the order question a test of fellowship, while most of those who rejected his teaching admitted they could worship where the order was used. What a spectacle! Can't you see why this division never should have happened? Irvin Waters, in his description of the events preceding the break, said it best. 18 years ago, brethren on both sides of the order controversy were inflamed by passion and motivated by negative emotions when we plunged rashly and headlong into a needless division. Rationality did not dictate our course, and love did not rule our attitude, speech, and conduct. At that time, I was so irrational and lacking in the spirit of the Master that I, in my home congregation, would not have consented to having contribution before communion and prayer last in deference to anyone's conscience. We raised the sword against each other and foamed out our own shame. I am thankful that some of the old participants from both sides in that old fiasco have confessed to each other and to God, asking forgiveness and forgiving. I am sure that angels rejoice where they wept. We never master ourselves and climb up higher until we face up to our mistakes like men, admit them, and then proceed. Let the others do as they may. Let the adverse criticism come. I feel clean and free now. It is impossible for one writing 50 years after a problem to be completely conscious of all the attitudes, behind-the-scenes actions, and harsh words resulting in a division. I cannot and will not judge in this. Had I been there, I might have reacted as they did. Reviewing what facts I do have, however, I cannot in good conscience condone what happened during this period of our history. Had both sides acted according to their stated convictions with love and concern for each other, there would have been no split. There had to be a better way, if only we had sought till we found it.